Welcome to The Roundup, where we tackle big health topics from the outback to the tropics. I'm your host, Alyssa Hatherley, a local GP and head of James Cook University's Clinical School in Mackay. In each episode, you'll hear from experienced clinicians sharing expert insights on key regional health issues, best practice approaches, and practical strategies to improve patient care in regional and rural settings. Before we begin, I'd like to respectfully acknowledge the Australian Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples, their contributions to healthcare, and the traditional owners of the lands in which we practice and provide education. In today's episode, I'm joined by Dr. Gopakumar Hariharan from the Mackay Hospital and Health Service. Hello, Gopan. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Aletha.
Gopan, you really wanted to talk about the approach to behavioural problems in children in North Queensland. It's a really challenging area to work in. I know you have a passion for it as a paediatrician and neonatologist in North Queensland.
Yes, certainly. We are seeing an increasing number of referrals because of behavioural problems in children. And this is the major work that we undertake in the paediatric outpatient clinic. And so certainly I have a great interest in child development and behavior. And so I'm delighted to talk about some of the strategies that GPs can adopt to provide care for these children.
So Gopan, what are the biggest behavioral problems that you're seeing from your point of view?
The behavioral problems is an umbrella term. It could be anything. It could be child temperament, and it could be a normal variation. It could be related to ADHD, part of autism, anxiety, depression. So any of these conditions can present with behavioral problems in children. So from a pediatrician point of view, the aim is to differentiate different conditions. And so we work very closely with GPs to help these children and their families.
And it is a whole family issue, isn't it? And we often see families when they have been trying to manage these behavioural challenges for quite a long time before they present to general practice, right?
Certainly. It is a great struggle for the families. And I find that access to support and awareness of support is what is a major challenge for families and possibly for GPs as well. So a great struggle for families, but it is important to recognize that there are great supports available for the community within the system itself.
So, Gopan, before we send the patients and the families off to see the pediatrician, what are some of the organic causes that we might need to exclude?
From a general practice point of view, I think as the first point of contact for the families, the general practitioners are ideally placed to support the family. The most important step would be to take a detailed history in order to identify what the underlying conditions are, because many of the support can be put in place before the family comes to the pediatrician. The history would be very important, keeping in mind the spectrum of behavioral issues in children and their underlying causes. GPs might be able to start off some workup in the form of giving questionnaires or gathering information from the school about behavioral concerns. And I also encourage parents to give a narrative review of the behavioral concerns that they have about their children. So that gives a very objective view of what needs to be focused on. So a detailed history would be very relevant, and also organizing questionnaires, getting reports, and doing some baseline tests like audiology and optometry, which is relevant for any behavioral conditions. And that way, by the time the patient comes to the pediatrician, the workup has already started and the time to diagnosis is shortened.
Are there some particular bloods that we should be doing as well? How often are you finding that there's an additional cause for the behavioral concern, like iron deficiency or celiac disease? Do we need to be taking some time to look for those things?
I find in most cases, the underlying pathology is very rare, but it is very important to look at iron deficiency is something that needs to be ruled out because children can present with behavioral problems and attention problems. So before the patient is referred to the pediatrician, it might be useful to incorporate some basic blood tests such as full blood examination, iron studies, vitamin B12, folate, etc. But it is very difficult to give a prescriptive form of testing for these children because in many cases we may not find any underlying blood abnormalities. So it is a balance of understanding what to test against over-testing as well. So it is a balanced approach, and I believe that the direction to the necessary test to be undertaken will come from a detailed history from the patient and the family.
So Gopan, what are the particular questions we might be asking these families before we refer them on to a specialist service?
The questions would essentially be regarding the actual behavioral issue itself. And the aim will be to differentiate different behavioral conditions. And that might include the presenting issue, which is the behavioral problems itself, exploring what exactly is the behavioral problems that the family is struggling with. It might involve details of the triggers for those behavioral problems. What exactly does the parent do to manage that behavioral conditions, and what works and what doesn't work? And that is very important to understand. There might be struggles from a family point of view regarding parenting, and that is important to recognize as well. The parents might have their own struggles in terms of mental health issues, and that might direct putting more supports for the family as a whole. A detailed history on the time of birth and what happened after birth is very important. And also the antenatal period, because some of the babies who are born preterm, even babies who are born more than 32 weeks, are currently determined to be at risk of developmental issues and behavioral problems in future. So those histories related to the course of development after birth is very important. And also the timeline of behavioral problems. For example, if the child is presenting at 6 or 7 years of age, it is important to understand when the behavioral problems started, because that will give us a direction in terms of coming to a diagnosis. So I believe the detailed history on all aspects of the child's life would be very important, which would include the presenting issue itself regarding the behavior, the history around the birth, the development, and social context. Those would be the most important history that needs to be taken in any child who is presenting with behavioral issues.
So Gopan, you mentioned parenting and parenting style and parenting challenges as being one of those aspects to manage these children. What are some of the resources that you direct your families to that we can support our families with from a non-pediatrician perspective?
There are a number of resources that are available for families to access if they are struggling with child behavior. For example, in Mackay, the Carlisle Community Health Center will provide parenting education. They also give a number of other services that the family can access, which includes education around sleep, well-being, and other areas. So Carlisle Street is for Mackay, it is a very good resource for the families to access. There are also many parenting courses that the families can undertake. For example, Triple P, Circle of Security. And many of the courses are organized by agencies such as Churches of Christ, and they advertise the different programs that are available for parents on a regular basis. And these resources are what we pediatricians provide to the family for supporting them. So if these resources can be accessed while waiting for an appointment with the pediatrician, the parents are already on their way to support their child more effectively.
And so often, Gopan, it's just a matter of suggesting families reframe their expectations, isn't it? And consider the tone that they're using, the phrases that they're using with their children to get a better behavioral outcome. Is that not so?
Yes, certainly. Some of the behavioral issues might stem from the struggles that the parents have in terms of communicating with children. And there might be a number of reasons for that. And I believe that parenting children is a skill that needs to be developed by education. So my personal perspective is that some of these education regarding child behavior and development needs to happen antenatally itself before the parents started their family planning. Unfortunately, that may not happen, and parents struggle with looking after their children after their babies come into the world. So very important to have those skills developed by the parents very early on. And so accessing those supports would be very important for the families.
So, Gopan, you've talked about the importance of a really detailed history, gathering information from collateral sources like the school where appropriate. Make sure you've got a good history about the antenatal and perinatal period for this child. You might want to do some bloods, but you're unlikely to find anything for a child that's otherwise growing in weight and height appropriately. You've also mentioned the importance of parenting style and developing those skills using your local community health centre, church services, or formal parenting programs like Triple P. Now, you mentioned a referral to audiology or optometry services. Is that easily to access for families?
Currently, the system, at least in Mackay, is that all referrals originate from the general practitioner. So that shift has made it very, I would say, streamlined to an extent that GPs are the center of care for these families with complex needs. So from an optometry point of view, I gather that GPs would be ideally placed to make that referrals straight away. Ophthalmology referrals are made by general practitioners in Mackay, unless it is category one, which means that the ophthalmology problem is an emergency. Audiology, I believe there are services in the community, but if they are all private, then the pediatrician can make those referrals internally within the hospital. So in most referrals, the GPs are able to initiate most referrals, but where there is difficulty in organizing in the community, we might be able to help within the hospital.
And of course, those specialists, the audiologists, the optometrist, the ophthalmologist, it's important that we communicate to them that the child is being assessed for behavioural concerns, isn't it? Because their assessment of the child is not just about whether they can hear or whether they can see. They look a lot more deeply into how those sensory systems are affected by that child to be more specific in how they can address those problems, aren't they?
Yeah, I cannot agree with that more, Lisa. Communicating very effectively is very important. All my letters and from the pediatricians from the base hospital is generally copied to all the specialists involved. For example, if the child was assessed from an ophthalmology point of view, then once I received the letter, I would copy my letters to the ophthalmologist as well. So all the specialists who are involved in the care of the child will receive a copy of my letter. And I feel that this is very important that all the team members are aware of the different services that the family is accessing for providing a holistic care for the child.
That's so true, isn't it? This child with complex needs isn't just raised by a community village with extended family and friends and soccer coaches, but a village of healthcare providers who are providing their little piece of the puzzle that that young person needs. So now, Gopan, once you've received the referral with the detailed history, the extra testing from those other healthcare providers, what is it that the paediatricians are able to do then for these children with complex needs in North Queensland, where they may not have the access to resources that our colleagues in metropolitan centres can offer?
From a paediatrician point of view, once we receive the referral, we collate all the information that we have and then do the preliminary interview with the parents and try to understand what the major concerns are. I find that in most occasions, it is not one diagnosis that we might come with, because if a child is diagnosed with ADHD or autism, there will be comorbidities such as anxiety, depression, etc. So We take a holistic view and try to understand the underlying factor which is causing the behavioral issues and come to a diagnosis. And in order to come to a diagnosis, we have a number of questionnaires that we administer, which I believe can be administered by the general practitioners before referring to the pediatrician as well, which might include for ADHD, the Vanderbilt form can be completed by the school and also the parents. The Spencer scale for anxiety can be undertaken at a general practitioner level. And if that comes to us, then it expedites things. But in general, if those reports are not available, then we initiate those testing from our side. And if blood tests have not been done, then we undertake those tests in the hospital. Once we understand what is going on in terms of the underlying factor responsible for behavioral problems, then we can initiate appropriate treatment. A new service that is available for us currently is we have a clinical nurse consultant who has been employed to look after behavioral developmental cases. And it might be that the initial consult for the patient occurs with the clinical nurse consultant who takes a detailed history, sends off the forms, collate all information. And so all those information is ready before the pediatrician consults the family.
Okay, so that's incredibly important for families with children with complex needs, with behavioral challenges that are increasing in prevalence. Now, Gopam, once you've seen these patients and ironed out their behavioral challenges and developed a strategy to provide additional supports or interventions where appropriate, do you send those patients back with a detailed plan to their GP?
Yes. In patients that I see, I prioritize my letter because I want to care for this family in collaboration with the general practitioner. So my letters generally would be sent off within 24, 48 hours. And I give a very detailed plan on what to follow up. For example, if I start a patient on Ritalin for ADHD, then I would make it a point to mention to the family to seek an appointment with the GP in 1 week time to look at blood pressure, heart rate, and a clinical review and decide on increasing Ritalin or stay on Ritalin. And this is something that I advise the parents that their first point of contact is general practitioner. And then I organize a review maybe in 3 or 4 weeks as a first review. And I encourage parents to send the details of the clinical review from the general practitioner and also a narrative review of what things have changed after being started on medication. So I work very closely with the family and also with the general practitioner so that the center of care for the family remains the general practitioner. Currently, the Ritalin can be prescribed and for that matter, stimulants can be prescribed by the general practitioner once the initial diagnosis is made. And so it might be that the general practitioners become more familiar with following up these children so that that comprehensive care required for the family can be provided at the primary care level.
That's fantastic, Gopam. Are there any other services or opportunities that these young people can only get through the tertiary care system that we can't offer from a primary care point of view?
Most of the care can be provided at the regional level for behavioral developmental pediatrics. There are occasions when the care can be very complex, requiring antipsychotic medications, etc., in which case we contact the Queensland Children's Hospital. But that subset of patients is very small. So most of the patients that we see in our clinic can be managed effectively in collaboration with the general practitioner. And we would rely heavily on the initial workup and interview and direction that the patient needs to take in terms of the diagnosis itself from the general practitioner. And if the preliminary investigations and workup has been done by the general practitioner, then it makes the time to diagnosis shorter and more effective.
That's fantastic advice, Gopan. Now, I know that you're a parent and have reflected a lot on your own parenting style. What would be your top tips to parents in our communities?
From my point of view, I have recognized that parenting is not a natural trait. We have there is a lot of self-education and reflection that needs to occur, and there are books that I recommend to the parents to read. And so it is an active process. I believe that parenting is an active process where we have to learn to parent. And that is my top tip for the parents, that recognizing that parenting involves a lot of learning and self-reflection.
It's tough, isn't it? Because there are a lot of books out there on the market. There are lots of different styles of parenting. You really do have to find what works for you and for your family and for your child with those complex needs, don't you?
Yep, certainly. I have my own list of books that I recommend to the parents. And I do ask them to send a narrative review of what they have taken away in terms of implementing some of the strategies and what worked and what didn't work. Because I believe that the behavioral problems in children can only be improved by collaborative approach, and parents are a key component of the holistic management for the child. And we as physicians are not in a position to completely understand the child's behavioral problems. It is the parents who would know their child better and hence well placed to help their children.
Now, Gopan, just in case from a primary care perspective, we have a particular concern about a particular child where we think their behavioural concern might actually reflect something much more sinister happening at home, how do we notify the authorities about those patients who we think might be at risk in their home environment?
At any point, the hospital has pediatrician on call 24 hours, and the general practitioners are welcome to contact the pediatrician for any advice in complex situations. There is also the clinical nurse consultant in pediatrics who can be contacted for any directions in terms of workup or seeking support in terms of reviewing the child at the earliest. So pediatrician on call and clinical nurse consultant would be probably the point of contact if there are complex situations that the general practitioner is faced with.
What about in terms of child protection services, Gopan?
We have a child protection service within the hospital. So if there are concerns of child protection, then the child protection unit can be contacted directly for advice. Alternatively, the concern can be raised to the on-call consultant pediatrician in the hospital, and then we would make the necessary arrangements to review the child at the earliest. We can involve the child protection liaison officer within the hospital and who would liaise with the child protection services in the community. So it is, again, a collaborative approach to make sure the appropriate care for the child is achieved. So it is important to recognize that general practitioners have support any time of the day if they're concerned.
Oh, Dr. Gopan Hariharan, consultant pediatrician and neonatologist in the Mackay region, thank you so much for talking about your approach to behavioral problems with children. I think your top tip on learning to parent, like we learn any other skill, is probably the most important takeaway from today's chat.
Thank you, Elisa. It's been a pleasure.
For more information about the Roundup or to share your feedback and ideas for future episodes, visit nqrth.edu.au/roundup-podcast or contact us at nqrth.mackay@jcu.edu.au. We also want to advise that the views and opinions presented in this podcast are those of the speaker only and do not represent the views and opinions of James Cook University, Northern Queensland Regional Training Hubs, or Queensland Health. The content supplied in this podcast is not intended as medical advice and is for educational and entertainment purposes only. Northern Queensland Regional Training Hubs is an initiative of the Australian Government's Integrated Rural Training Pipeline and is facilitated by James Cook University in partnership with public and private hospitals, Queensland Aboriginal and Islander Health Council, health services, Aboriginal community-controlled health organisations, and general practice clinics.